On behalf of appellants, Mr. Hartman, good morning and thank you for coming to off-site court.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. I appreciate for the honor to participate today. Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm Kurt Hartman and I represent the appellants Look Ahead America and Mary Lann Riney. I will reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. The legal issue before this court today is relatively simple and straightforward. Whether, consistent with the liberal construction of the Open Meetings Act, that it should be construed liberally in favor of openness and transparency, whether public bodies may undertake all discussions and deliberations in closed-door executive sessions when the subject concerns or touches in any manner the purchase of property. The Fifth District believes that the law allows such unlimited executive sessions, explicitly holding in paragraph 22 of its decision that, quote, a public body can enter executive session to discuss the purchase of property without additional qualification. In contrast, appellants posit that when the subject concerns the purchase of property by a public office, additional requirements exist that are imposed by the Open Meetings Act. Specifically, we maintain that closed-door executive sessions are allowed for the consideration of the purchase of property, but it must be a purchase for public purpose and, most importantly, considering only the situations when the premature disclosure of information would give an unfair competitive or bargaining advantage to a person whose personal private interest is adverse to the public interest. Our position is supported, firstly, upon the clear language of the statute. Secondly, by applications of rules of grammar, including the last antecedent canon and the series qualifier canon, and as well as that explicit mandate in Division A of the Open Meetings Act, so that it is to be liberally construed.
Assume we agree with you on the grammatical point. Assume we agree about your reading of the statute. How does that play out in this case? I take it you think there's discovery that you could have done that you didn't. What specifically was that?
The discovery was, to address that, if you look at the trial court's rulings were constantly driven by this perception, by what I perceive was a misperception of what the law is, that if they went in to discuss property, that's the end of the inquiry. No cross-examination to challenge it. In paragraph 41 of the Fifth District's decision, they give a little bit of a quote to the trial court, where the trial court says, it's a real simple question. Did you discuss anything beyond the scope of purchase of property for a public purpose? And we can move on. Because if they didn't, then we're done.
So what would you have liked to have been able to ask that you didn't?
Well, I think first and foremost, one of the questions, and I address it in the footnotes in our fact section, this was a purchase of voting equipment. It wasn't being done at competitive bidding. There were proposals submitted. Essentially, if you will, no different than going down saying, here's the unit price for a scanner, here's the unit price for that. Tell me what you want to buy, multiply it, that's your price. It was an off-the-shelf purchase. When were these proposals presented to the board? They weren't presented in the public session. Yet, finally, in their brief today, the Board of Elections at page 3 and 4 basically given a judicial admission that those proposals were presented to the board in December. We want to know, when were they presented?
How is that relevant to the question of whether this is something that the premature disclosure of would give?
Well, because it opens the door to say, why did you need to discuss these proposals that were public records before the meeting in executive session? What private personal interest was being protected by going into executive session? I couldn't even ask that question at trial.
So is your claim about the questions you couldn't ask at trial or the discovery you couldn't do?
Both, because the court entered a protective order, which basically said, you know, we said we want to do discovery on these issues. We've identified items in the minutes from the board meeting. And I think probably the best example is the January 6th meeting. They go into the executive session, again, for the purpose of discussing the purchase of property for a public purpose, period. Nothing about the premature closure. They come out of that meeting, and the board chairman says, we're back on the record. We've discussed and revisited our decision with respect to Dominion voting equipment. We've considered the claims that have been made against them. We've determined them to be false, and we stand by our decision for the adoption of Dominion voting equipment. They discussed and revisited, considered, revisited, determined. None of that occurred in public. And we were precluded from any examination because the judge said, hey, they were discussing property. That's the end and the beginning of it, beginning and the end. No further inquiry. Everything else was irrelevant. So that would probably be the most significant item in terms of the discovery that we weren't allowed to do and that we were not allowed to examine at trial. There's constantly going into executive session, coming out, making some declaration as to what occurred, and no inquiry. And we believe that, and that all those evidentiary rulings proceeded from an error of the trial court in believing the sole question is, did they discuss property? I had a colloquy with the court about page 92 to 98 of the trial transcripts, because I'm getting frustrated. The judge is kind of being jovial about, hey, you haven't asked the magic question yet to go beyond it. And finally, I figured it out, and basically she says, and this is the trial court, if they deny discussing anything other than the property, that's the end of it. No further inquiry, no challenge, no cross-examination, nothing. Because, hey, they said it, everything else is irrelevant.
So if I'm trying to understand exactly what your position is. So if they had legitimately determined that we need to consider the purchase of these voting machines in private because doing so, because we did it in public, it would give someone a competitive advantage or whatever the language of the statute is, would that preclude, are you saying that all their discussions, once they made that determination, had to be limited to things that centered around giving someone else a competitive advantage, or could they discuss the whole, once they made that determination, could they breadth of discussion about purchasing?
I don't know. I think it is limited to that because it is the statute.
It's limited to what?
They can go in to go consider the purchase if the premature disclosure of information. So basically, if you're going to, that's not liberally construing the act consistent with Division A, that all deliberations need to be public unless specifically exempted by law. So what your question kind of says, hey, if they can tie it in to some premature disclosure over here, that doesn't open the barn door that they can then discuss anything and everything about the purchase of property.
That would be pretty unworkable, wouldn't it? That if, you know, once you, that, well, okay, well, you know, Commissioner so-and-so, you're making this comment about what, about X on this purchase, and there's nothing.
Well, I think
so. We have to go back into public session, then we go back. You know,
no, I don't think it's a back and forth, which is kind of the questions you had in the Hicks case, I think, as well. I think the issue becomes one: consider what exactly information the premature disclosure would give an unfair competitive advantage to somebody. Usually, it's the price. I don't know anything else beyond that, but I don't think the General Assembly went to so constrain public officials on that. In this case, the price was known. These were bids that were submitted before the meeting at public records. So it wasn't the price that was at issue. You know, and there was one instance in the trial court, I think it's at page 82, where the trial judge surprisingly allowed the question to come in, was there anything that needed to be kept confidential in the executive session? And the executive director of the board, or the director of the Board of Elections, said, in my opinion, yes. Okay, fine. That prompts the next question. What information? Can't ask it. I mean, I think it would pull the string to say, what exactly was the information that needed to be kept confidential? Maybe not in detail, but at least at a 30,000 foot level, because otherwise, if we can just say, hey, there's some confidential information we want to keep, we can then open up the door for everything. I don't think the law allows that. And again, the whole evidentiary rulings at the trial court proceeded from this perception that the law allowed unlimited executive sessions so long as it touched upon the purchase of property. You know, they go in back to this January 6th meeting, they go in to consider the claims that have been made against Dominion voting equipment. They did all that in public. They whatever those claims were, the public has no clue what those claims were. But the fact that there are claims about, you know, voter integrity against Dominion equipment, is there anything confidential about that really needs to be kept confidential to protect the public interest? I think the public interest is advanced when that information comes out in public. But then they go on and say, we determined they were false in 99.9% of the case. Of course, I'd be curious, what's the 0.1% that they determined they were true? Again, none of that occurred in the public forum. And part of the Open Meetings Act and part of the gist is to give confidence to the government in its decision-making process. That when the decisions are made, I'll give you an example. This court, when this court issues decisions, we do not get one-line entries. We get analysis, we get rationale. That builds the confidence in the court's decision. Similarly, when public bodies engage in making decisions, adopting resolutions, buying equipment, how they come about that decision being done in the public breeds support for those decisions.
I want to understand something that you said early
okay.
in response to Justice DeWine. All of the bids, it was a public bidding process, and all of the bids submitted to the county were in writing, and all of it was a private record, was a public record.
Prior to the meeting, yes, Your Honor. And there was a written recommendation that was tendered to the board before the December 9th meeting.
And who was it tendered by?
It was by the director and deputy director of the Board of Elections. But all that would be public record.
And in the public record, you said the price and everything else was in the bidding sheet.
That is correct. I think it's Exhibits 1, 2, and 3 of the trial transcript. There's the recommendation, the written recommendation from the director and deputy director. That gets presented in executive session, apparently. None of this came out in public. And so I kind of posit what needed to be kept private, private confidential information in order to protect the public interest were they going into the executive session for? Usually the situation, again, is when they're buying from.
Do we need to know that specifically if the statute allows it?
If the statute allows?
If do we need to know what information would need to be kept confidential because we're talking about, as you said, public records?
I think it would come out should come out at trial if applying the correct legal standard, because again, one could say, I go back to the scenario, if a public body is buying a piece of property, what price are you willing to pay? That's confidential information that would give, if that private person selling it knew it, it would give them advantage. Okay, fine, I'll hold out till you get to your max price. Absolutely there. And that's what I think this statute is designed for. But in this case, the price was already known. It was simply how many scanners do you want to buy? How many of this and that do you want to buy? It's like no different in a certain sense than going down to the office supply store and buying the copier off the shelf. But under the construction that the Fifth District and the trial court did, they could go in to talk about, do we go buy a copy machine or a pencil from the office supply store? Because they put no restrictions. And when they limit it to, if you limit it to the premature disclosure of information so that it does not give an unfair competitive advantage to a person whose private interest and competitive interest, it's its competitiveness that's being advanced. If that's not an issue, it's not legal to go into the executive session. And at trial, I think you are allowed to pull the string to kind of say, what was that information? How was that information? Again, I go back to that January 6th. Why did they need, what confidential information to protect the public interest was necessary for them to go in to discuss and revisit their decision? What confidential private information in order to protect the public interest was necessary for them to go in and consider the claims against Dominion and to make a determination? Thank you, Your Honor. To make a claim, make that determination. Nothing was, confidential information was not protecting the public interest. It was protecting, keeping it secret. And that's not consistent with the letter of the law, with the construction of the law. And those issues should have been able to be explored and that string pulled to say what information needed to be confidential. I don't know because we were not allowed to do discovery on it. We were not allowed to even examine it at trial. We would ask the court to reverse the decision of the Fifth District and remand for a new trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Ms. Nemeth. Thank you for agreeing to present at off-site court.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy. May it please the court. Lisa Nemeth on behalf of the Stark County Prosecutor's Office representing the Stark County Board of Election. We are here on the limited issue, the only proposition of law that was accepted, the statutory interpretation of G2 of the Open Meetings Act. And
can you get a little closer to the mic?
Sorry, is that better? Provision G allows a public body to go into executive session to consider various subject matter, and G2, in pertinent part, permits a public body to hold executive session to consider the purchase of property for a public purpose without any additional qualifications or prerequisites.
So then what do you do with the last part of the statute, which says if premature disclosure of information would give an unfair competitive or bargaining advantage to a person whose personal private interest is adverse to the general public interest?
Well, we would take the approach that the trial court did and say that it applies to the other two sale or the other two property provisions in G2, which
how do you possibly get to it applies to the other two? I mean, I could see an argument it applies only to the last. I could see an argument that applies to all three, but there's no convention of grammar that would allow you to say that clause just applies to two elements and not.
I think that if we are just applying the rules of grammar, that it would be just applicable to the last.
Isn't that what
provision.
We do? I mean.
Yes, and I think the comma here is not necessarily
so,
evidence.
So what's your position? Is it applicable to the last provision or the last two?
If we're not looking any further, I believe it's just applicable to the last one.
Well, how does that make sense when the prior version of the statute had it follow the second provision?
And that's exactly why I believe that it does apply to the last two, both of the sale provisions.
Doesn't that kind of defeat your argument that
I don't believe it does, because in either of those scenarios, I don't think the legislature intended for it to apply to the purchase of property. And I think we can look beyond just the rules of grammar to determine that. You know, when we look at it in context, which is what we're required to do when we're interpreting the text, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
We don't generally look at things in context. We look at things in context sometimes to understand how things work. With the rules of grammar, we don't generally take a completely atextual reading based on context, which is kind of what you're suggesting, that, this clause can only modify the second two clauses and not the first.
Yes, and that's because if we're looking at a reasonable reading here, you know, to be it's going to have to make sense when you read it in context, and
we can't really change the words to make it makes sense.
And that's true. And I think that if the legislature had clearly wanted to make it applicable to the purchase of property, they would have changed the language. And I don't think there's not really anything that demonstrates that better than.
There's the fact that rule last antecedent, the fact that these are all divided, have a comma after them, would suggest it applies to all three, at least in some versions of statutory construction.
I agree, you know, that the comma can serve as evidence if there's no other contrary intention expressed. But in this case, the premature disclosure clause itself doesn't really make sense in the context of the purchase of property.
Why not?
Well, that's where the Fifth District got into their, you know, exploring it in context.
I mean, your opposing counsel has an example about purchasing a box of Staples or a pencil at Staples, right? I mean, there's no reason that that should be private. There's no reason unless the premature disclosure of information about purchasing public the property would give someone an advantage that the board should be able to go into an executive session.
Yeah, and I think generally boards are not going to hold an executive session just to discuss the purchase of something as simple as office supplies. They're doing this, and I think it would be consistent with what was mentioned in the amicus brief when there's some kind of sense, you know, a general sense that something that needs to be discussed outside of the scope of the public.
Well, that may be that they go into session when they don't want to discuss something in public, but the question is whether they're allowed to. And that's, I mean, what was it that they were discussing that the public couldn't know?
Well, we don't know the details of that, and contrary to some of the statements that were made at BPA.
General sense?
Well, it was all about the discussion of voting machines, and this is the culmination of a several years long process where they're vetting the different vendors that made bids, exploring which of the vendors were going to offer the best deal for the citizens of Stark County. And ultimately, this culminated in the
But wasn't that already, I mean, weren't the prices already known, so?
The prices were, the details were known, but making a decision, you know, whether anyone wanted to express hesitation as to going that route. And
so why wouldn't you want to have that conversation in the public forum for transparency so that the public actually does appreciate the work of the board?
Sure, and in large part they did, and I think it's noteworthy here that in each of these executive sessions, when they came out of executive session, they clarified as much as possible the detail that they, what they were talking about.
So that doesn't even make sense to me. Well, if you're going into executive session because you're discussing something that the General Assembly affords you a protection around, non-disclosure, why come out in the public meeting and then basically paraphrase what you've just said under that shroud or shield of it's non-public? Why make it public unless you should just be really having the conversation in the public?
And in some sense, maybe, you know, I don't know the details of what they actually said when they were in that executive session, but maybe they make the determination that some of this stuff should be made public. But this is all done under the backdrop of, you know, there were things going on outside of their just pure consideration of which vendor to go with. All of the public interest in this.
So say that we disagree with you on the reading of the statute. Say we think that this provision applies to all three. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that we send this back for a new trial, or what does that mean?
No. The next kind of level, I guess I'd say I'd go to, is if you determine that it applies to all three, and specifically that it applies to the purchase of property, I think we get back to the whole, what exactly does that mean? What does the premature disclosure clause mean when it applies? And it doesn't specify that the board has to make particular findings that this criteria has been met.
But they at least have to have that as a reason, don't they? If that applies.
And I guess that comes down to, you know, the language of the clause itself being so vague and unworkable. You know, it doesn't specify the type of information, what qualifies as premature disclosure.
So you think even if it does apply, it's just really just meaningless then?
I don't think it's meaningless. I think that it just, in a more general sense, means that the board has to have some kind of, or the public body has to have some kind of reason to believe that this is sensitive information that really shouldn't be discussed at that point.
Okay, so take that. So what does that mean in the context of this case? If we accept that viewpoint, does this get remanded for a new trial to allow the other side to conduct discovery? And
no, because they haven't presented any evidence of a violation.
Well, how can they?
Go
ahead. I suppose, you know, the discovery stopped short when the trial court made their rulings. And
But the trial court's ruling was quite broad, right? They were discussing property, end of story.
Well, they were allowed to do additional inquiry, and they chose not to do further depositions. But we, you know, the board had already at that point disclosed all of the information, everything leading up to the December 9th meeting, all of the background information, and had already, you know, submitted their answers to the discovery requests and said that they didn't have any further knowledge, that they didn't have any additional recollection of what was discussed in the meeting.
But our square one, going back to Justice DeWine. Mm-hmm. Is what is the interpretation of the statute? And if we agree with your colleagues on the other side that the trial court misinterpreted the language of the statute, as did the Fifth, and we reverse the Fifth District Court of Appeals on affirming the trial court, then the choice is we remand with a proper definition or language of the statute for the trial court to apply it in lower court proceedings? Or what are you suggesting? We simply find, without that record, that they violated the Open Meetings Act on the first instance?
No,
So we would then remand it to the trial court to apply the proper definition, correct?
I believe that the trial court's ruling would have remained unchanged even if that was the definition, even if the clause did apply, because there was no information that the look ahead had co- come up with to point to,
then
no
evidence.
Then
what's the harm in doing so, other than you just think it would be a futile act?
Yeah.
And a waste
of resources? Nothing else to act. I mean, the entire thing that we're missing here is that the position on the other side was that it was the board's burden to come up with proof to show that they complied with this, and that they that their discussion was involved and limited to this information.
But the broader position is you violated the Open Meetings Act.
Well, and the board is not ever going to be in a position to come up with information to disprove that. And I think that's where we would look to this court's ruling in the Hicks case, which while we were in trial, that was still pending. And we had the benefit of the review of that case once we reached the Court of Appeals. But the trial court's rulings were consistent with how this court eventually ruled in Hicks.
But if we were to find that the Open Meetings Act was violated, isn't there some sanction or penalty involved?
At this point, there hasn't been a specific, they never made any kind of specific indication as to how the board would have violated it, even assuming that this premature disclosure clause applies. The contention was that they either got to interrogate and cross-examine and depose the board members into conceding that there was some kind of a violation, or that the board would have to come up with its own evidence, which we know it wasn't required to keep, in order to prove that it didn't commit a violation. And so that was unworkable, and that's why I say that regardless of this court's ruling, it wouldn't have changed the trial court's position. The outcome still would have been the same. They wouldn't have gotten to go into a trial and simply just berate and cross-examine the witnesses into conceding that they couldn't prove there was no violation under that standard.
So as a follow-up to that, if the public body votes to enter into executive session to discuss or consider the purchase of property, I don't think that it needs to say the magic words of the conditional clause, but I think it boils down to a question of discovery. And do you think the plaintiff should have been allowed to ask if, you know, questions along the line in discovery of the conditional clause?
I think that would have to be determined on a case-by-case basis if that was the position that this court takes. But in this case, the board provided all of the information that they had. So if there wasn't something in particular in the information that Look Ahead America already had obtained from the board, there was nothing else that was going to come out that would have allowed them to make their case. So there was no more evidence that would have been forthcoming. That might not be the situation in every circumstance, though.
But let's take the scenario. Let's say, according to what Justice Kennedy said sort of hypothetically, what if we disagree with the trial court's interpretation of the statute, meaning if they discuss property, that's it, we don't need to talk about anything else. If the Board of Elections were to move in this situation and actually had not discussed anything relating to competitive bidding or unfair disadvantage, private interests relating to as opposed to public interest, there would be a violation of the Public Meetings Act, the Open Meetings Act, then, wouldn't there?
If the court ruled that way, but there would have to be some evidence as to what they discussed to know that it didn't meet that definition, which I think comes full circle back to the question about what exactly the premature disclosure clause would mean in application. And one of the important things that I wanted to point out is if they had intended this to be a very restrictive clause that prevented a public body from making any kind of determination or having any kind of discussion before executive session, they could have made this similar to subsection G8, which has very specific criteria. It says in a lot more detail about specifically what type of information. It says confidential information. We're not talking about confidential information here. It gives various circumstances, such as marketing plans, business strategies, trade secrets, in which the public body can make these considerations, and it has to be related to economic development assistance plans. I see that I'm out of time. Can I finish my, may I finish my answer?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. And it also specifies that those have to apply, like, the those conditions have to apply. The board has to make, the public body has to make specific findings that the information is directly related and to specific circumstances. And in addition to the procedural requirements of subsection G, they also have to make a unanimous quorum of the unanimous quorum of the public body has to make a determination by a roll call vote that the executive session is necessary for that purpose and to protect the interests of the applicant or the investment. So we see that if the General Assembly had intended to make these requirements explicit and require the public body to determine the exact nature of the information it was going to consider with regard to the subject matter, they could have done so, and they didn't do that in G2, so it would be unfair to hold a public body to that burden and expect them to produce proof that they complied in these circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartman, you still have 54 seconds for your rebuttal.
Thank you. A couple quick points, Justice DeWine. You said that it appears that maybe it applies to the last, maybe it applies to all three. In that situation, then, you need to follow your decision in the Brattonall case in paragraphs 14 and 15, where you said if there's reasonable interpretations, multiple reasonable interpretations, you adopt the one that advances the purpose of the Open Meetings Act, not one that thwarts it. I would submit that is correct. You advance it by applying it to all three. In terms of the context, we've kind of focused on the first sentence, but if you look at that entire paragraph, and the newspaper Amici called out in their brief, the subsequent sentences talk about covert information, about what's the impact if covert information is disclosed. Clearly that statute, that provision, is designed to protect covert information, not unlimited information. I think that adds to that thing. I would point out that counsel for the board couldn't even identify, in theory, what needed to be kept confidential, because the prices were already known. There was nothing else. If you remember, this dealt with Dominion equipment. There was a lot of controversy, and I really think the board just went in to try to keep the controversy away from their meetings. And finally, in terms of discovery, the trial court, I would call to your attention the trial court's decision or its protective order, which carried over into its pretrial order and its evidentiary rulings at page 13. It's at appendix page 52 of the appendix. There the court said that the court finds that the plaintiffs are not entitled to depose the Board of Election members regarding, one, the basis for or any substantive discussions regarding their decision to vote to purchase Vote Dominion equipment, and two, the board's assessment of risk relating to the premature disclosure of information and unfair competitive advantages, as such areas are wholly outside the scope of relevant discovery. That's what the trial court did. They asked you to reverse and remand. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. You will receive a decision from the court. Marshall, please close the court.
Take your all binders. Rise. Hear me, hear me, hear me. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.